Breakthrough.
You are now listening to Breakthrough News. It's 5 p.m. You're listening to Breakthrough News, and this is The Punch Out. We're following the news all day so you don't have to, giving you everything you need to know about what's in the headlines and what should be. And we are back with you here on the 5th of May, 2021. Very happy to be back with you on this Wednesday. And we have plenty for you here on the show, as we always do. We're going to be talking about how today, May 5th, is the day of awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls here in the United States and also in Canada. We're going to be talking about how the cops go easy on corporate crime. But before we get to either of those two very important stories, we turn first to the somewhat surprising turnaround, it seems, by the United States as it concerns a vaccine waiver at the WTO. Well, today and tomorrow, the World Trade Organization is taking up the issue of a temporary waiver to relax intellectual property rights on vaccines to allow the necessary production to vaccinate the world and curtail the COVID-19 pandemic. In the United States, and what was breaking news as we went to press today, so details still emerging, the United States, which was the key opponent of this waiver, has, it seems, lifted its opposition to the waiver plan. Now, for the past several months, India and South Africa I've been leading a coalition of 100 countries at the WTO in order to get the WTO to enact a trade-related aspects of intellectual property rights, or TRIPS, waiver for vaccine patents. That would allow for a short-term, narrow, emergency waiver, allowing essentially anyone to make any of the vaccines. However, not in an unlimited amount, just enough to actually meet the need, and after a certain period of time, the waiver would lapse, again protecting the original patent under WTO rules. And this U.S. move comes as there was widespread global outrage that the move wasn't being made, that it was being blocked by a number of rich countries. The survey released by the People's Vaccine Alliance today noted that 70% of people in G7 countries supported a waiver, 69% in the United States. So clearly, almost every country, and even most of the people in the countries that have been blocking the waiver so far, think it makes sense to do this waiver, I should say. And of course, it does, because the longer a large number of people go unvaccinated, the more potentially vaccine-resistant variants can grow, and ultimately the worse the pandemic can get. We could end up back at square one. So vaccinating everyone as quickly as possible is clearly the most logical route. Now, the waiver is a huge issue. It's not necessarily a panacea, though, although it is really the crucial precondition to ramped up global production. So without a doubt, the U.S. changing its position is huge. This is over Big Pharma, who, by the way, just had a record lobbying quarter in the first quarter in terms of what they were spending. So details still emerging, but one of the things we really want to focus on here is what are the other things that have to happen now that the waiver has been passed to really ramp up global vaccine production? And the reason we want to talk about that is because it also implicates the United States and the need of the U.S. government to do more. Now, vaccine production is a complex process. It's got a lot of different inputs that you need to bring together. And in fact, this was the root of the issue. You remember when India first saw its spike in cases that its ongoing collapses public health system, that Indian companies were saying, well, we need more inputs from the United States and there's a ban on them. And so we can't increase vaccine production. Now, there wasn't an outright ban, but what had happened is because of the Defense Production Act, all of these inputs being produced by these American companies that were necessary, and it's all sorts of things from the cellular material itself to one of the main things, actually, something called bioreactor bags, and that is basically part of the process of cell culture, of growing cells in vaccine production, that these contracts they have because of the Defense Production Act, even if stuff is going and stacking up in a warehouse, they have to give them to these U.S. companies or the government or whatever it may be, because they've said that we're going to take everything first, again, regardless of need on a worldwide scale, whether or not we're using them in the U.S. So it creates a bottleneck in the supply chain. So the only real way to address this is, well, there's many ways, but to address that bottleneck in the supply chain, because if you have everybody trying to make vaccines, people know now and they will be able to access the intellectual property in order to make the vaccines. But if everyone's rushing all at once, up and down the supply chain, there could be different bottlenecks that make it difficult to move forward. So the reality is the Defense Production Act element of it has both a problem, of course, and that was what we just talked about, but it holds within it a solution. The government isn't just buying all these inputs out of pre-existing capacity, but has spent billions of dollars expanding the capacity of companies up and down the supply chain to produce more. And that's good, of course, because that's something they can do again. They can work with the same companies or others to continue to scale up. So that way you're dealing with the critical element. So everyone who possibly can start trying to make vaccines. And as they start trying to ramp up their own production, they don't hit bottlenecks in the supply chain. The U.S., by spending billions more dollars like they did before to build out this capacity, can absolutely play a huge role, perhaps the crucial role, in making sure that this vaccine ramp up can really take place in a real way, even though this TRIPS waiver is now, it seems, likely to be granted with the U.S. turnaround here. And there's also the fact that the U.S. itself could increase vaccine production significantly. Public Citizen, an advocacy group, has produced a credible analysis that the U.S. could produce enough vaccines for the entire world for just $25 billion. Now, I think we spent trillions and trillions of dollars now in the context of COVID-19 relief bills, and should have spent more, don't get me wrong. But $25 billion U.S. production could apparently vaccinate the whole world. But either way, the only way to address the overall issue of vaccine shortages, what's really become a vaccine apartheid, is to have an all-hands-on-deck sort of approach to production. The IP rights were a major stumbling block to the type of creative global cooperation that will be required here. And even with the IP rights relaxed, it will be up to the United States and other wealthy countries to help put the resources in place to make sure that the promise of the TRIPS waiver can truly become reality and we can curtail the COVID-19 pandemic. Well, among other things, 2020 saw the lowest level of corporate prosecutions by the Justice Department since that statistic started being released in 1996. 2020 also saw the highest number of leniency agreements negotiated for corporate criminals in the last 4 years. And both represent long-term trends over the past, well, couple decades of a decline in corporate prosecutions and a rise in what are basically get-out-of-jail-free cards for corporations that break the law. This is all according to a new study by the advocacy group Public Citizen. And they note that in 2020, these leniency agreements, quote, made up nearly one-third, 32%, of all resolutions of federal cases against corporations accused of crimes. It's the highest the percentage has ever been in the last quarter century. 2 decades ago, prosecutors entered leniency agreements with corporate criminals only about 1% of the time. 20 years ago, 1%, now 32%. These agreements and their deferred prosecution agreements and non-prosecution agreements in the technical language are essentially just promises not to break the law in the future. And they are often weak stipulations. You have to pay some fine and say you're going to change what you're doing. But even when those weak stipulations are violated, the companies are often not brought to account. As the study on last year's data notes, quote, J.P. Morgan Chase received its second deferred prosecution agreement and fourth leniency agreement from the DOJ in less than 10 years in 2020. HSBC, a London-based megabank, received its third deferred prosecution agreement since 2012. In fact, 63% of all companies that get one deferred prosecution agreement or non-prosecution agreement get at least one more. So 63% getting one of these leniency agreements guaranteed to get at least one more. 66% of companies that get at least one deferred prosecution agreement or non-prosecution agreement, 66% end up pleading guilty to some other crime later. So the vast majority of people who they're giving these lenient treatments to are not scared straight. They immediately go back to committing more crimes. The report also noted that even in egregious cases, the Justice Department decided in 2020 to show mercy. That included allowing Chipotle to settle a case with a deferred prosecution agreement where they poisoned 1,100 people in multiple incidents and forced sick employees to work, which helped spread these serious illnesses. They ultimately paid a fine and promised to do better in the future after poisoning 1,100 people. Novartis, it's a big pharmaceutical firm, actually got multiple deferred prosecution agreements thrown its way in 2020 to cover widespread bribery and an attempt to rig contracts and fix prices in the generic drug market. And the non-prosecutions paint a similarly bleak picture. The report notes, quote, senior DOJ officials ordered staff investigators and prosecutors to stand down in criminal cases against Walmart for opioid dispensation violations, Monsanto for illegally storing hazardous waste, Royal Bank of Scotland for its role in the 2008 financial crisis and Caterpillar for tax evasion, and reduced a civil penalty against British bank Barclays for its role in the financial crisis by billions. The DOJ cut deals to avoid prosecuting some of the most egregious corporate offenders, including Boeing, whose 737 MAX oversights resulted in the tragic deaths of 346 passengers, Wells Fargo, whose rampant predatory cross-selling fraud lasted over a decade, and Walmart, which benefited from massive bribery schemes to advance its business interests. Clearly, there is no lack of rampant criminal activity in corporate America. Yet unlike the massive militarized policing apparatus set up to corral even the pettiest of so-called offenses committed by poor and working class people, particularly in black communities, it seems like there is very little interest in doing anything about the thugs in the corporate suites. It's capitalist justice for you. Today, May 5th is the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls here in the U.S. and Canada. And it's a day set to draw attention to just the epidemic of violence against Indigenous women in the U.S. and Canada. Native women in the United States are subject to murder rates 10 times that of the national average and are 2 times more likely to experience sexual assault. In Montana, Indigenous people are 25% of all missing persons cases, but only 7% of the population. And in 2017 alone, 5,646 Native women were reported missing. The crisis is rooted in the decades of genocide, racism, brutality, and abuse visited on Indigenous peoples, and that has created a set of official systems that sanctions violence against Native people by non-Native people. The general low-priority law enforcement puts on violence against women and the easy procedural excuses creating by overlapping local, state, and federal and tribal jurisdictions, and also the growth of extractive industries in areas with significant populations of Indigenous peoples, and really just how all those things fit in together. The growth of pipelines, fracking, and other mining projects has resulted in large, quote-unquote, man camps, often housing up to 1,000 workers being set up there in order to work in these various industries. And a number of studies have linked these camps to increased sexual violence and sex trafficking. And one important element of this is that non-natives can't be prosecuted by tribal authorities, meaning that local police, who are often extraordinarily racially biased against Native people, or the FBI, who of course have the same reputation, are solely responsible for policing these crimes, and obviously don't take it that seriously. So it all adds up to make it very easy to attack, assault, kidnap, and kill Native women in the areas where these camps are popping up. This year's Day of Awareness, thankfully, has a slightly higher profile because the first Indigenous woman cabinet secretary, Deb Haaland, Secretary of the Interior, has helped in a big way to raise this issue at the federal level higher than it's been, at least in terms of the news and people noticing it. It's a big step, I would say, in raising mass awareness, although much remains to be done in the realm of action. But hopefully everyone can take this May 5th to look more, research more, and take action in this crisis, this epidemic that has goods going on in this country for many, many years of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Also in Canada, May 5th, National Day of Awareness. Please tell somebody. And that's going to do it for us here today on The Punch Out. We'll be back with you tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern. Don't forget, today we also have our patrons-only edition of The Punch Out dropping. If you go to patreon.com/breakthroughnews and become a patron, you'll get access to that as well. But again, back with you tomorrow at 5 on The Punch Out here on Breakthrough News.